Good afternoon, everybody. I'm presenting to you my baby in lots of ways. This is my dissertation research that's still happening as we speak. I want to thank the Women's Caucus for having me and allowing me the opportunity to meet with you today, and also my committee. Been supportive and encouraging the entire way, including one of the members who's here with me today. I have nothing to disclose. I feel like I should be at a customs border when I say that. Overview kind of looks similar to everybody else's, but giving you some introduction, background, and really focusing on the measures that I'm putting together to look at well-being in maternal childhood. I'd be remiss to say that my work isn't personal. These are my babies, Mia and Owen. I was working as a hospice social worker when I delivered preterm twins. So I went from end-of-life care to beginning-of-life care. And while I was in the NICU with my twins for about a month, my eyes were blown wide open to some serious issues in my own community. I was surrounded by a lot of black moms and babies. And after I got my bearings, which you might imagine took a while, being a first-time mom of preterm twins, I started asking bigger questions of why is this happening and are there patterns? Of course, I'm preaching to the choir here. Of course, there are major patterns in my own county, but certainly across the nation. We see black families really bearing the brunt of both preterm and low birth weight across the United States. Buffalo, New York, is very representative of the nation in many ways. Unfortunately, we rank sixth as the most segregated city in the nation. Segregation looks a whole lot of different ways, but when it comes to resources and care, it really stands out in birth outcomes, kind of our canary in the mines, as most have said. We talk a lot about disparities, and I really try and not use that word as often as I use inequities. I'm not the first to do this, obviously, but I think the nomenclature makes a big difference in how we think about the solutions. Disparities sounds kind of clean to me. Inequities really talks about the culpability of the social and economic structures that kind of maintain these differences, these systematic differences. So inequities really implies social injustice, which is what I think we're looking at in many ways here. I'm going to clip through these pretty quickly because I think most of you are familiar with, but there's lots of theories of etiology about these inequities in birth outcomes. Some that I've presented here many times, right, about the life course perspective, weathering hypothesis, and physical embodiment or social epidemiology. And lots of different ways they articulate how this happens, but the common denominator is this stress mechanism. And again, that's also articulated differently. But looking at the erosion of the immune system, premature aging, or allostatic load is talked about quite frequently. And then Geronimus in particular talks about the eliciting of health deteriorating coping mechanisms. So enhanced use of substances, coping in different ways, pick your drug, including eating or not eating. There's lots of literature also connecting people's past to their present, right? In particular, childhood experiences on adult health, linking poverty to poor adult health, neglect and abuse to adult disease such as COPD and many, many others. And then more specifically, looking at disadvantage and birth outcomes. And Whitney Witt, who's been presenting, I think, all day today, I just saw her speak twice in one session, and she's venting right now, about stressful life events and the correlation between preterm birth and low birth weight. And again, Geronimus looking at the advanced aging of black women in particular. So this, again, is my dissertation, and I had this glorious plan, which was really supported and looked at by my committee. I thought I had everything just in place so I could set it in motion. It would be totally fine. Well, we all know that that's a load of baloney. I think I'm somewhere in the water, but I'm in a boat, so that's good. So I was hoping to be much further along in my data collection than I am currently, so I'm going to share with you what I have so far, but stay tuned because there's much more coming. My study really looks to address gaps in psychosocial factors around across the life course and how they contribute to inequities in birth outcomes, and articulates a measure of childhood well-being based on the social determinants of health. We talk a lot about social determinants theoretically and conceptually. We have a hard time articulating or measuring them, operationalizing them. So this is a stab at that, and I would love your feedback in the process. And also just obviously contributing to knowledge around the etiology and really and truly points of prevention more so than intervention. So we're going to focus on the articulation of a measure of childhood well-being, maternal childhood well-being. Brief look at the overview of my study. It's a retrospective mixed methods design. I'm using structured interviews. I'm conducting face-to-face interviews with moms, first-time moms, English-speaking, sadly, because I'm only a monolinguist. I can't accommodate others. And first-time moms, I really specified as singletons because we engage differently. Once you've had one kid, you interact with your pregnancy and the world around you a bit differently. So first-time moms, just to keep it a bit simpler. And singletons, again, for risk factors. Again, as a mom of twins, we know risks go up as multiples increase. And not currently pregnant, because once again, you've gone through pregnancy, your current pregnancy might influence the way you're handling things. I'm recruiting from just about everywhere in my community. I had really hoped to work through Women and Children's Hospital of Buffalo, and they've been very supportive, but it also created some bureaucracy to wade through, which is why my plan kind of did a little bit of this. But I'm recruiting from the hospital. Women and Children's is our biggest provider. It has the highest ranking NICU in the area, but also community health clinics, area churches, pediatric practices. I am flyering the daylights out of the community and also kind of doing information sessions a lot throughout the community, kind of introduce myself and the research. Social media has been considerably helpful. Facebook, mom groups, breastfeeding groups, those kinds of things. And snowball sampling also. I'm hoping to hear, hopefully today, if I can recruit directly from the NICU at the hospital as well, which will get me access to more folks who've experienced adverse birth outcomes. But as you might imagine, so far I'm only at 35 women. In fact, that number's grown since I put these slides together. I've had 5 more interviews. So there's lots of women lining up to do this, but they look a lot like me. Average age of 30, although I haven't beat by a number of years. Every single one of them engaged in prenatal care. Most of them have a bachelor's degree or higher, 50,000 plus for income, right? This is a very skewed sample, as you might imagine. I do have some variety, but not much, and I wasn't surprised. It's very easy for me to get a hold of women that look like me. There's a different comfort level in engaging in research, and in the Black community where I do all my clinical work, I'm just yet another white face. Asking to do research, and they have about 1,000, maybe a million reasons not to trust me or not to engage, or the time, or the finances, or the support, you name it. So I'm working on that by working with some of my community partners who are actually ushering me into their churches and into their community and kind of bridging the gap in the trust to literally give me entree, which is a wonderful thing. So some of my big questions are, does childhood well-being predict birth outcomes, right? We talk so much about life course perspective, but we need to put this in a model, and there's certainly research around this. But again, I'm looking at then this mediating property of adult health. We would assume that if you have a somewhat compromised childhood, you might have compromised adult health, right? These ideas go together. And lastly, does stress moderate the relationship between adult health and birth outcomes? So when you put this all in a model, this is what it looks like in general. And what we're going to focus on, again, is this latent construct of childhood well-being and how I'm choosing to articulate that based on social determinants of health. So one of the, I think, somewhat unique ways that I'm looking at this is that we often look at SES as a very static measure. In many research studies, it's your mother's highest level of education income. I think that doesn't tell us a whole lot of anything. And as a social worker, which I identify most strongly with, and then a researcher, I really think it's important to get the context of these situations. So I'm looking at socioeconomic circumstances, which is much more fluid and dynamic. I bring ideas of intersectionality into my work, and I also think that that can be limiting because there's multidimensionality to intersectionality. We think of things as one dimension, and that we know that that's not the truth. So an idea of what this looks like, I'm using a series of questions about socioeconomic circumstances in combination with a MacArthur subjective social status ladder. So starting from infancy, I'm asking questions about who were they living with, who took care of them, were they working in the home, outside of the home, and then having them rank in their community and then nationally where they think that their family fell in those moments. And this gets a little redundant depending on the life circumstances of the mother I'm speaking with, but from infancy up till 18, I ask, so what changed, and what was the change, and what did that look like? And then have them rank again where they fell on these ladders. So although my sample is small, this is a little snapshot of what I'm finding so far. The number of changes is not limited to 4. I have many women who've had 8, 9, 10 different changes that they're speaking to me of. But what I wanted to point out, and although I didn't run any stats on this besides descriptives, because it would be, I think, inappropriate given it's such a small sample, you see a trend, a downward trend with each change, especially on the national ladder. And I can tell you, again, just kind of anecdotally, that the women who experienced more changes oftentimes fell on the lowest rung. They placed themselves there. And one woman asked me if she could go below the ladder. Some of these women were foster care. Some of them were homeless for a better part of their adolescence. I'm also, in conjunction, looking at ACE scores, adverse childhood experiences, and again, in a small sample, the vast majority are only 0 to 2, but 36% so far indicating 3 to 7 adverse childhood experiences. What's interesting is that I'm sitting down with these women, so if I were to just slide my measures in front of them, I would miss most of the story. I'm getting so much more by hearing them and asking them different questions. And after each measure, I'm asking for feedback. Is there anything else you want me to know? What else am I missing? Right? Trying to inform a better measure in the long run. And some of that feedback is, why doesn't this include certain things like parent loss? One woman lost both parents in one accident and was placed in foster care. My mother was beating my father. Does that count? Because in the ACE measure, it talks about mothers being abused by someone in the home and abandonment. So lots of different things that we could be capturing. And also, with looking at the social circumstances, I'm looking for qualitative information about their community and how it felt growing up in their home. Did they feel safe? Did they not feel safe? Guessing for descriptors again to advise the measure. Also looking at measures of parental bonding. Caregiver one is normally mom in most cases, and caregiver two is the most often dad. And if you'll notice, almost 50% in both cases are receiving quote-unquote optimal parenting based on this measure. And interestingly enough, too, the difference, the second most highest ranking for mothers in particular is affectionate constraint, so a loving handle, so to speak. And for fathers, it was affectionless control, so not the warm and fuzzies, but trying to keep tabs on what's happening. And also looking at adult health. So I'm doing checklists. Asking about individual health behaviors, but also other diagnoses. It's a relatively healthy sample so far, but what I think is interesting is that, again, this is almost an entirely white sample that I have thus far. Anxiety and depression are significant, and given my clinical experiences, this makes me question a lot of things, one of which is it much more safe and open and available to talk in a white community about anxiety and depression and stressors than it is in the black community. In working with women who are living with HIV that I do with Red Cross, their stressors look very different, and the way they talk about them is very different than the women that I'm having in this sample currently. I'm going to skip for just a second. So this gets us back to a model. All those that I just articulated are comprised childhood well-being, and I'm using them in a continuous fashion, so their scores will add up, and they'll be then sectioned off into kind of different rankings or late in class, maybe eventually, and looking at where women fall within. What's interesting, though, so far in the sample is though I have a number of women, and just because it's a white sample doesn't mean that they are immune to really difficult situations in their childhood and fluctuation in their circumstances, the baby's health seems to not be affected so far. I think only two have reported a NICU stay for their babies, and I think that's fairly interesting. Let me go back. Going back to my model, though, I'm looking also at stress during the pregnancy, about the pregnancy, using the NUPDQ. And as you'll see there, the mean score is about 11. And these are questions about, are you concerned about the health of your baby, the quality of health care that you're receiving, changes in relationships during the pregnancy. And there's a whole lot of yes answers. And it goes from not at all to somewhat to very much. Lots of somewhats and very muches. But it's also not capturing a whole lot of what people are experiencing during the pregnancy. This is a very limited list of what might be bothering them. What it doesn't capture that I'm hearing most of are economic stressors and other life stressors, things happening in the family where they don't feel supported or they're moving around and their social supports are missing. So again, looking at this model, it's, I think, and I'm hoping to be able to report in not distant future about how reliable, if this measure actually holds together in and of itself. But again, it's trying to get a better idea of all these different factors that might be impacting childhood health, which would then translate to adult health. What's interesting, again, in the sample so far is that although there are a number of women who've had significant adverse childhood events, lots of reports of sexual and physical abuse. So even though it's a 0 to 2 in their ACE scores, they're fairly significant adverse childhood experiences that they're physically carrying with them throughout. But I'm wondering if it's going to be predictive at all. But what I'm also asking of these women, oops, I did it again. Because I have them and because they're willing to talk to me, I'm asking what they think about these bigger issues that we're chewing on here at the conference and in our sessions specifically, which is, do they think that social justice and equality play any role in how healthy or unhealthy people are? And almost without fail, they say yes. And it's not just a, maybe. It's a yes, absolutely. And so I ask them to articulate why. And most of them point to issues of nutrition, access to care, community and neighborhood circumstances that might be eroding health. And then I asked them specifically, after giving them some statistics about Erie County, where we live, but across the nation, about these inequities or disparities in birth outcomes. And most of them don't know that that's happening in their community. And I think that's pretty interesting. And again, this is a very, very whitewashed sample, to put it mildly. But it's interesting that they think that social equality or inequality plays such a significant role in health, but they don't know the specifics or what that really translates into in some cases. I did, interesting enough, again, between putting these slides together and coming here, I interviewed a woman who is in supported living, does not have her son currently, and she is in the justice system around drug use. So she's only 20, and she's raised by a drug-addicted father who spent most of his life in prison, and a mother who battled her own issues. And when I asked her about, does social justice and inequality play a role, she said no. And she's one of my only Black participants, and she said everybody has the same opportunity. And I thought, that's pretty fascinating. I don't push too hard. This is right. This is their opinion, and they're entitled to it. But I found it really fascinating that one of the few people who's really been handed quite a lot is saying that everybody has the same opportunity. So, unfortunately, at this point, I have more questions than I have answers, which I'm hoping I'll solve more of during the course of my data collection. I'm hoping to capture about 150 to 200 women, so I'm just in the beginning. But this has only been 6 weeks of data collection, so far, so good. Obviously, looking at logistics of sampling strategies, but also adequacy of measures. Again, if I were to have slid the ACE score or the socioeconomic circumstances in front of these women, I would miss so much of what's actually happening to them. By actually sitting down and honoring someone's story, you have the benefit of learning so much more, which I hope will then we can feed back to the community. But I do question, are there cultural differences? And I use cultural kind of loosely, because I don't have a definition in particular. But again, it gives my clinical work versus my research. Stress looks differently and is articulated differently by women of color than white women in particular. But also, it gives me a little bit of hope. If there's a common understanding that there is a relationship between social justice or injustice and health, what can we do to forward that momentum? This is a bunch of women, and arguably resourced women. How can we get them on board to talk about these things and to recognize their own community struggles to move that forward? So that's where I am, and stay tuned. I'm happy to share with you what I find along the way. Thank you.